shores of El Pacifico. Phil Hendry.
It's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, the news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. And truth is our bitch on this show, and tonight, no different. We have Dr. Ron Tarner paying us a return visit, given the fact that Dr. Tarner was involved in, I don't want to call it a free-for-all, but it was quite a melee yesterday on our program, last night on our program, I should say. And by the way, this is Radio for Patriots by Patriots. We haven't played the stomping sounds of the comrade's boots in the streets. And when I say comrade, I don't mean that I'm not being facetious. I mean, you know, friends, comrades, that kind of thing. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. In other words, I don't mean commie.
Yeah, no, okay. I understand.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. And, of course, we're online at philhendryshow.com, a live streaming video of our show right now. You can watch that. You can also pick up thousands of hours of archived material with a backstage pass. As a matter of fact, the backstage pass is so affordable and affords you an access to probably some of the funniest radio you're ever going to hear. It may very well be the greatest deal on the web right now. So check it out at philhendryshow.com. Dr. Ron Tarner on his way back, I guess, from Mountain Meadow tonight. Doctor?
Yes, I am, Phil. I'm returning from two staff meetings, as a matter of fact, and heading home a little late.
Thank you for being with us last night.
Always a pleasure.
Although, as I was saying to the audience, it was a bit of a melee, huh?
Well, Professor Clayton, I think, has got a lot to learn about debate. I'm not really sure what Mr. Grover was talking about.
It was all about Gabrielle Giffords and a variety of viewpoints, which were at times rather extreme. But I've been planning on having you on here to talk about Operation Safe School for quite some time. And that's because it's an interesting take on the whole idea of censoring library books.
Yes, Phil. First of all, we do not believe that library books, that the contents of any book in our school's libraries, intended for our children, intended for their consumption, we don't think any of them should be subjected to the kind of outrageous censorship and editing that we have seen so many other school districts, or that we have at least have heard proposed by so many different peoples in so many different school districts.
You're talking specifically now about the Huck Finn controversy, right?
That is correct.
Right, so I can get people up to speed on this. The Huckleberry Finn controversy, the Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, was one, I believe, back east that had a number of parents upset that the N-word...
That is correct, yes.
It was used in Huckleberry Finn, and I've heard very eminent educators, one of whom was Mark Lamont Hill, and Dr. Hill, who is an African-American and is I would say, a very progressive liberal, defended Samuel Clemens, defended Mark Twain's use of that word because it was a period piece. It is emblematic of the times. How do you feel about that?
Well, I'd like to say I don't know who Mark Lamont Hill is. You say he's a liberal. I find that hard to believe.
I can assure you he's very liberal.
Well, I don't know how that's... And you claim he's black.
Yes, he is.
Well, I don't know the man. Both of those things run counter to my... And they run counter to my intuition and run counter to my intelligence. No black man, and certainly no educated black man, who is a political progressive, would ever countenance the use of the N-word in any communication.
No, but you know, I would agree with that. But he was saying that in the context of Huckleberry Finn, the fact that it was written over 100 years ago, the fact that it was written colloquially and set colloquially for its times, that Samuel Clemens, the author, Mark Twain, used the word appropriately in the context of society at that time. And Dr. Hill was making the point.
You know, you're getting. I think you're getting it, and I say this with a great fondness for you. So you're getting it over your head.
Why do you say that? I mean, I'm just quoting the man.
Well, you're quoting a doctor now. I'm a doctor, and you are now quoting two doctors. And really, I should be talking to Dr. Hill because I am also a doctor. you are a layman, and you're, you know, you're paddling to try to stay afloat in some pretty deep water.
All I'm telling you is that I heard, in other words, I heard what the man said.
No, I understand you heard, you think you heard. Let me say this, Phil, if we could get to the, let me turn the radio down here. If we could, I think I got Rusty Humphrey. I thought I had you on. I think I got Rusty Humphreys on. Let me get to the point that I was going to make on your program this evening, and it's very simply this. We do not believe in censorship. We do not believe in taking Huckleberry Finn off the shelves of the library and running a black pen through the words. We don't believe in taking Huckleberry Finn off the shelves and tearing out pages. But what we do understand is there is a great deal of sensitivity, and rightfully so, when it comes to the N-word, as it has come to be known. We have hit upon, in Operation Safe Schools, a compromise in which we maintain the derogatory racial, if you will, the derogatory racial reference or touchstone, but we don't use the N-word. Our feeling is, because we are progressives, and again, I find it very difficult to believe that Dr. Hill, when you say he's a progressive...
Well, I mean, the man is a very well-known. I've heard him speaking many times on television. He's been on Fox TV.
Well, Fox TV is very reactionary. No.
He is not an employee. He's been brought on as a guest many times. Bill O'Reilly has had him on the show.
Okay.
And he is very liberal. He's he is a black man. He's an educator.
Well, you said he is a black man. Are you sure?
You know, yes, I'm sure. I was wondering whether I would call him educator, doctor. He's a black man.
Well, see, right there is a sort of a racist. See, you wanted to say black. He's a black. What can I say to make him worse?
No, not worse. No, I said he is a black man. Can we say that? Can we just stick with that so that we are not? So, in other words, I don't have to explain a Freudian slip here.
All right, that's fine.
Dr. Hill has said he defends keeping that word. He would never, in his words, I heard him say, he would never, ever edit the N-word out of Huckleberry Finn. You can't do that with a classic piece of writing. It's a kind of a censorship that's ghoulish and totalitarian. It also rips away the colloquial essence of the book and the our ability to take a snapshot of those times and see how people thought. Even as educated and as well-spoken and as wonderful an artist as Mark Twain was, that word, the N-word, probably meant something slightly different to him than it does to us today.
Well, all right. That's all well and good. But let me just say this to your listeners, because I feel, again, I know you're trying to get to the point, but your listeners now know that this is a little bit of a battle between two doctors. I'm a doctor. Dr. Hill is a doctor. You are a radio talk show host. And, Phil, I'm very fond of you, but you know as well as I do, many of the people in your position are high school dropouts. Some of them have criminal records. Some of the people in your position have been guilty of sex offenses, drug offenses. So
that is not me. None of what you just said is me.
I understand that, but there is a prejudice that we want to break, but there is a prejudice. People are going to hear you, and they're going to think of you as a some kind of a bohemian, if you will, a talk show host, entertainment people. And are you using drugs? Have you been guilty of sex crimes against children?
I reject all of that, and I would like you to stop talking that way, because that's not me, that's not anybody that I know, and I don't know how you get the outrageous idea that people automatically associate that stuff with talk show hosts.
Because you're not a doctor is all I'm saying.
Of course I'm not a doctor. It doesn't mean that automatically I'm a talk show host. That means crimes against children, drugs.
Well, do you deny that your people, the people that you are of, you know, your... they say the tribe, but it's not tribe.
You talking about my profession?
If you want to put it, do you deny that you people have been your profession? Do you deny you've got a lot of jailbirds?
And I don't know. I don't know.
Are you denying? Are you
look at Dr. Tarner? I want to continue on with our discussion about Huck Finn. I don't want to get sidetracked about you're a doctor and Dr. Hill's a doctor, and I'm just a child molesting talk show host, so therefore I am not allowed to say anything.
I never said that, Phil.
Can we get to what your plan is, Operation Safe Schools?
I would like to do that. I was simply trying to clear the record for your listeners. I apologize.
All right.
What we want to do, Phil, with Operation Safe School is not edit Huckleberry Finn or any other book that has offensive words. What we want to do instead is to maintain the racial term or the racial essence, I meant to say, but change the race so it reflects more commonly how people feel today. Would we call a black man the N-word today? No, we would not. However, would we, and would even some whites who are hopefully a little more progressive, would we not refer to whites as the white devil? We may. And what is more important is that there is no social prohibition against that.
So just so I know, you would take out the N-word.
We would remove the N-word and replace it with white devil. Why? The white race is far more indictable now, and it will be socially acceptable to indict the white race. I'll give an example. We have a line here from Huckleberry Finn. We will insert the word white devil. Here is a line. It was 15 minutes, Huck explains, before I could work myself up to go and humble myself to N-word. But I would put it this way. It was 15 minutes, Huck explains, before I could work myself up to go and humble myself to a white devil. But I done it, and I weren't ever sorry for it afterwards, neither.
Now, even though that character is black?
The character could be black. The character could be a white devil who is similar to the black character N-word Charlie, or N-word Jim, I should say. So if you're talking about N-word Jim, and he's saying things like, I grind down to get me some flapjacks, let's say. Who says that a white devil can't talk that way? Especially when it's the South, and especially when it is back in the 19th century. And look at the way Huck Finn talks. I weren't sorry ever afterward. He sounds inbred. Well, not inbred.
All right, hold on for a minute, because that's a whole lot of stuff to be thinking about here. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. We have on Dr. Ron Tarner. His Operation Safe Schools is about taking the offensive words that kids may find in classic literature in the school library and taking out the racial epithet that might mean somebody might be referring to a black person and put in something referring to a white person. In the instance of Huckleberry Finn, take out the N-word and put in white devil. Now, why is this? This is, as Ron will probably explain, this is political correctness run amok. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445, the world-famous Phil Henry Show. We'll be right back.
We can't fight this fight alone. Give us a call, 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445. To call the Patriot Hotline, dial 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
World famous Phil Henry Show, and welcome back here as we are talking with Dr. Ron Tarner. We got Dr. Tarner back on the program two nights in a row, and well, we're going to get Dr. Tarner on the line with us, as we have had him on the line with us, to talk about Operation Safe Schools. That means that they are going to these libraries, the school libraries, where a great many books are, obviously, and some of which are classics and some of which are contain offensive words. Huckleberry Finn's one of them. Now, this was a school back east, right, Ron, that initially had questions?
Yes. I read the news reports of a school back east. There were parents upset with the use of the word, the N-word, in Huckleberry Finn. When we came to them and we said, we will replace the word, but we're not going to edit the essence, and we used instead white devil or snowflake.
All right, that's what I was going to ask you. What makes it acceptable to use a racial term for a white person? You know,
well, I told you.
Other than the fact that the whites were on top and the blacks were not, and so now it's time to to be fair.
Well, it's time to be fair, but no one's going to get upset if I say, for instance, and this still retains the racial insult. It was 15 minutes before I could work myself up to go and humble myself to a snowflake. But I done it, and weren't ever sorry for it afterwards, neither. Now, you'll notice we don't take out any of the weren't or neither, because that shows that Huckleberry Finn was uneducated, did not have a mastery of the English language, and he could very well be black himself because he didn't want to humble himself to a snowflake.
And so now what you're doing is you're changing Huckleberry Finn to a black character, and
no, I'm not. I'm saying he could. He's not, but he could be. So no, I'm not changing that. Here's another one, Phil. This is from the book Huckleberry Finn. Then I sat down and cried. Now this is Huckleberry Finn talking. I couldn't help it, but I couldn't sit still long. Pretty soon I went out on the road trying to think what I better do, and I run across a boy walking, and yes, and I asked him if he'd seen a strange snowflake dressed so-and-so, and he says yes. You understand what I'm saying? You have a...
What you're doing is you've changed the N-word out for snowflake or white devil, and that only confuses, I think, young people, because now they think the character is a black character that's talking, and that...
And Snowflake Jim could be a real dumb runaway indentured... Well, I don't know.
If you don't know and you're fooling around with a classic...
Bill, I can safely say this. Samuel Clemens, were he alive, I think would be smiling very broadly on our efforts.
And I don't know that you can make that statement at all.
Yes, I can. I believe if Mark Twain were here today and understood the times we live in, Mark Twain would very much say, kudos, congratulations on Snowflake Jim and everything, the adventures of Snowflake Jim.
All right, well, be that as it may, I don't know how you can make that. I'm sure that Mr. Clemens was a fair-minded man. I don't know that he wants to see his words change like that. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. What do you think about changing out the N-word in Huckleberry Finn to snowflake? With us is Dr. Ron Tarner.
When you say to snowflake, you snarled that.
No, I didn't. I was sarcastic.
All right, but you said, what do you think about changing it out to snowflake? Well, we are changing it from the N-word. You know what that is. A lot of people know what that is, and there's been an awful lot of violence associated with it.
I understand that. 877-876-7445. Chet in Allentown, Pennsylvania. Go ahead. You're on the Phil Henry Show.
Yes. I'm calling to comment about that. I'm a retired school teacher who spent 33 years in a high school district that was a suburban district with an urban population. And I think what this doctor...
I don't know. What does that mean? What does that mean, sir?
He was in a... You were in a...
I'm
asking, what does that mean? You were in a suburban school in an urban setting?
Well, to give you an example, we had 52 different languages spoken in the school, in the families of the homes in the school. Okay? And
was this in the United States?
Yes, it is.
This was in the United States? All right.
Yes, it is.
What part of the country?
This was back east.
This is back east. The African-American population in that school... we had, this whole thing of taking the N-word out is totally ridiculous. I think what this doctor is doing is shortchanging the maturity level of our students. They have more on the ball than I think what he is proposing. They know the difference of what an N-word is, and then now we're going to substitute something that is racially tarnishing white people.
As a way of evening it out. Just evening it out, that's all I'm saying. So if you say Snowflake Jim, now it's equal.
Wait a minute. Mark Twain, you said something. Mark Twain would come back and would applaud your efforts. I don't know how you can make such an outrageous statement like that. Mark Twain wouldn't want his words changed any more than any artist. He had a certain meaning to those words.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm agreeing with you.
Mr. Henry is, yes, you agree with Mr. Henry. You don't agree with me. I say that Mark Twain, looking at the times we live in, would probably say, yes, by all means, let's make him Snowflake Jim. Well, I'm saying that. You see what I'm saying?
No, I don't see what you're saying, and I don't think that Mark Twain would appreciate that. All right, Chet, thanks so much for your call. 877-876-PHIL. We're talking to Dr. Ron Turner, changing the N-word from Huckleberry Finn into the word snowflake, so that the, you know, Snowflake Jim and Huck, you know.
Yeah, what's wrong with that?
Nothing, man.
Phil Hendry.
Oh, I'm ridiculous.
Call the Patriot Hotline now. 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
World famous Phil Hendry Show, and welcome back. Here we have Dr. Ron Turner on the line with us from Operation Safe Schools. And that's an interesting title, by the way. Did you come up with Operation Safe Schools in making sure that that their offensive language is not in our school libraries? How did you come up with that?
How did we come up with Operation Safe Schools?
Yeah, I'm just curious.
Well, we feel it very much is a question of the safety of our schools to make sure that we are not inflaming any sentiments out there by using these words, which are patently offensive, Phil. I'm sure you would agree.
Well, I agree that they're patently offensive when wielded in a clumsy and offensive way, but when they're in the works of Mark Twain...
You know, Phil, you think that when you say the name Mark Twain, cufflinks are falling out of your mouth. Excuse me for saying this. Tiffany cufflinks are flying out of your mouth.
No, I don't think Tiffany. I'm saying Mark Twain was one of our you know, venerable authors, an American author who's respected. He knows what he's writing about. That's all.
Yeah, well,
I think it's presumptuous of you to say, oh, you know what, Mark Twain, if he were here, he wouldn't like that word, the N-word.
I don't think he would like the N-word.
Well, I'm sure that he would not, given the man's, you know, education, but at that time using it. How changing it to snowflake makes it any better?
Well, you know, I'm trying to tell you that if you've got N-word, that's going to make a whole lot of black readers angry. If you put in snowflake...
Well, what do you think the white readers are going to think?
The white readers are going to say, yeah, that makes a little more sense. You know, we have it coming.
We have it coming. And is this still a black character that we're calling Snowflake Jim?
Snowflake Jim?
Snowflake Jim.
Yes, it's a black character. Yes, it's a black character.
But you said that it could easily be a white character that's a black character that's Huckleberry Finn.
What?
You know what you said, Ron.
I said that if Snowflake Jim were white, then yeah, Huckleberry Finn would have to be black.
That doesn't make any sense at all. Now you're really changing the book, okay?
Well, I didn't see anything at the beginning of the book where Mark Twain has a list of all the characters that says Huckleberry Finn. Of Scotch-Irish descent, with green eyes, and likes mayonnaise and Velveeta. And
oh, come on. You know what I'm talking about.
Well, I didn't see that.
All right. N-word Jim. What color do you think he is?
I'm assuming black.
You're assuming?
Yes, I'm assuming, because he could be white. He could be one of those... you know what I mean, Phil, and I don't think that... What I'm saying is all that difficult to understand. What I'm trying to do is just level the karma of, well, I shouldn't say...
Level the karma of who, the whites?
A little bit, yes. Level a little bit of the white man's karma by saying, Snowflake Jim paddled down the river, blah, blah, blah. Here's a line, Phil, that, Ms. Watson, your runaway Snowflake Jim is down here 2 miles below Pikesville, and Mr. Phelps has got him, and he will give him up for the reward if you sin. And then there's a phone number here. 877.
That's our phone number.
No, it isn't. That's the book that Snowflake Jim, or that's the number that Snowflake Jim.
That's our number that was sent with the fax that was sent to you. There's no phone number back in Huckleberry Finn's time.
Oh, all right. I apologize.
All right. 877-876-PHIL. In other words, she was sending to get her runaway snowflake and left a phone number?
All right. I apologize.
If you're familiar with the book at all, sir, 877-876-7445. Here is Lee. Go ahead, Lee. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Yeah, you're talking to a big Mark Twain fan. I don't think today's students are so...
Outstanding.
I don't think students are so dumb that they won't understand something in context. This is a classic novel. Twain was against racism, not promoting it. He was showing how a low white trash kid could overcome the racism that society had taught him through the love and admiration he had for his friend Jim. And it needs to be presented that way in classrooms, as it has been done for decades and decades.
I understand that, but what about our black readers? What about our black readers who find that word totally offensive? I beg your pardon?
The black readers should appreciate that this guy was censored when the book came out because he was anti-racism. Twain
was censored
for the black.
Who was censored?
Censored. His books, they didn't want to put the books on the library shelf.
Oh, that's a load. No, that's not true, Phil.
It's not true. Oh, I don't know. It was where was it censored, Lee?
Several places all over the U.S. No, I wasn't
in the south. All over the.
I live in the south now, but I was not raised in the south.
But what I'm saying is, was the book primarily censored in the south? Is what I'm saying.
They didn't show the Nat King Cole show down there. I know that. But nobody called it, by the way, Lee. No one called it the N-word
King Cole
show. Yeah, no one said, "Here comes that N-word, Nat King Cole." Double N King Cole.
Nat King Cole.
We're not talking about the 1950s, yeah.
A classic from 100 years prior.
Here is a line. It starts out, "A couple of snowflake traders come along, and the king sold them the snowflakes reasonable for 3-day drafts," as they called it.
Well, see, you've got slave auctions going on. You have slaves being sold, whether or not you want to call them snowflakes. But what Lee is saying is this is a very much a snapshot of the word of that world. Okay.
You like to use this word snapshot. I like to use the word instead. It's not so much a snapshot as it's a skid mark from those days.
And what do you mean a skid mark?
I think that this is a book that doesn't so much show a picture as it is a stain from the underwear of the 19th century. Lee, your thoughts?
My thoughts is this cat's not smart enough to read Mark Twain, but his students probably are.
This cat? You're talking
yes.
about me. My name is Dr. Ron Tarter. I'm not a cat. I'm not a bohemian.
I know that. You made a big impression to the whole world about how smart you are.
Well, then you don't need to call me a cat. I don't hang out at the coffee house. I'm not hanging out at a coffee house, Lee. I'm trying to tell you. Oh, boy. Do you have a doctorate?
About Snowflake Jim?
Do you have a doctorate?
No.
That doesn't make any difference.
Yes, it does. She's laughing and you're laughing, and I'm the one with doctor in front of my name. What's wrong with this picture? What's wrong with this picture when the guy who has doctor in front of his name is constantly wiping egg off his chin?
I don't even know what you're talking about with egg. But
that's exactly there. Yeah, there it is. Give the lady a cigar. You don't know what I'm talking about. And
what you've been saying here, Dr. Tarter, for the last 3/4 of an hour is patently absurd. When you talk about Snowflake Jim, when you talk about Huck Finn could be black, you're ignoring everything that Lee said and that a lot of people have said about the works of Mark Twain. He was he was commenting on contemporary society. Dr. Hill said that. And he was giving people a look at a contemporary society in that part of the country, and to the extent that nobody knew about it, there were plenty of people in America that didn't really know the ins and outs of how race is related even then. Lee, thanks so much.
Lee, did you understand one thing that Mr. Henry just said there? Because I did it. I'll tell you right now, I did it.
Thank you very much, Lee.
I understand this conversation. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. 877-876-PHIL. And we're here with Dr. Ron Tarter.
When you say 877-876-PHIL, that was the number that Mr. Phelps gave in case anyone found his runaway slave.
And is that right?
That's what I was reading in the book.
I told you that when we faxed you the information, we inadvertently put it into a larger paragraph that contained a show description and our toll-free number. So that when you read that, you were reading our toll-free number.
Well, perhaps, Mr. Henry, you would do me the service in the future of separating information like that out. Otherwise, I'm going to read that into the paragraph as if Mark Twain believed you could call a toll-free hotline to have your runaway snowflake return. You just don't get it, do you?
If you're so familiar with Mark Twain and what he would say and what he would do and how he would feel about things, you know full well that Huckleberry Finn never had a toll-free hotline to call if you found somebody's runaway slave.
I don't appreciate being talked to that way, Phil.
I apologize, Dr. Tardy. Do you know what I'm saying?
I know what you're saying, but it's been a long time, 20 years since I read the book, and I didn't even like it that much. And it wasn't because it had a word like the N-word in it. It wasn't because it said N-word Jim. None of that. I just didn't like it because I don't like Missouri. Never have, never will. I don't like St. Louis, and I don't like the Bowling Hall of Fame. These are things that stay with you.
And all right, that's all very interesting. Thank you so very deeply. 877-8... Boy, oh boy. 877-876-PHIL. 877-876-7445. What do you think about efforts being made by Dr. Tarner and others to eliminate the N-word from Huckleberry Finn, as some school libraries have proposed, and replacing that offensive word for black people with an offensive word for whites, snowflake? 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Radio for patriots by patriots. It's the Phil Henry Show. Call the Patriot Hotline, dial 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
And he did it?
After a while, yeah.
Welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. With me is Dr. Ron Tarner from Mountain Meadow Observatory in Cloberton, Colorado. Dr. Tarner and I have been talking about the book The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn and how it, in at least one school that we know of, there was an effort made to remove this book, or at least have this book censored or somehow edited so that the N-word did not appear in the character of N-word Jim. Dr. Tarner has said that he would censor or edit the book and include instead offensive words about whites.
Well, I didn't say offensive words.
Well, you said that you would use Snowflake Jim.
Yeah, Snowflake Jim.
You also said...
Hold on for a minute. Why don't you pull over here? Don't fool around with that. Pull over. Yeah, you can smoke a cigarette. Go ahead. I got a driver, Phil, bringing me from the observatory. We're going to stop at a rest stop here. We're coming into Denver now.
How far away is the observatory?
Well, we're a couple of hours. I'll work at the observatory three nights a week, and then I come home.
Okay.
Well, to get back to your point, here is what I'm saying. With our method of calling him Snowflake Jim, now he becomes a runaway white, and the character of Huckleberry Finn could be black. You know, Phil, we just, you know...
I don't know how you can possibly do that.
Oh, really? You know, guess what just happened? This is going to come as a big shock to you. Spider-Man's black. Oh, you didn't think about that one, did you?
I don't know how they make those decisions, okay?
Well, I'm telling you how they make those decisions. The changing demographic of the audience necessitates those decisions. And
do you take... Spider-Man's one thing, all right? But do you take a classic...
So you're telling me... You, Mr. Henry, are telling all of your listeners, Spider-Man, you know, that's all well and good, but Huckleberry Finn, Jack, that's big-time classic. Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying that they can do whatever they want with a comic book, and...
Why would you let them rape Spider-Man, and yet Huckleberry Finn and Snowflake Jack, or whatever his name is, I forget his name now.
Snowflake Jim. It was... No, it's N-word Jim.
Excuse me, hold on for a minute, will you? What the hell did you put in that squirt? Snowflake Jim, you're telling me that you would rather them take Peter Parker and bend him over a railing...
Oh, come on. Will you quit being dramatic? They're going to change... Comic books are works in progress anyway. They are serialized. They are open-ended. We don't know where they're going. They're subject to change because there is no real end to the story of Spider-Man. It just keeps going on and going on.
What do you mean that just keeps going on?
Just like Superman, okay? It just goes and goes and goes and goes. So they're changing this and changing that. At one point, didn't they have like a half a dozen Supermen?
Boy, now you need to sit down.
No, I don't need to sit down.
They had a half a dozen Supermen.
Yes, they did. Yes, they did. 877-876-7445. So the point that I'm making here is the following. I don't believe you can make the claim that, because we live in changing times, just as they changed the race of Spider-Man, they can change the race of Huckleberry Finn or N-word Charlie so that he's now Snowflake Charlie. And that's what I find to be crazy. Now, I would ask you this question, then we're going to go to some phone calls. How would you feel?
Well, nothing you are saying tonight, Phil, is making sense. Does that bother you at all?
And I'm going to ignore your cheap insults, okay?
It doesn't bother you that nothing you've said it relates to anything that a human would know of.
I'm going to ignore your insults, and I'm going to ask you this point blank. What if I took something that you wrote and I changed it?
Hold on for a minute.
What if I took something you wrote and I changed it? I want you to think about that before we go to a phone call. 877-876-PHIL. Joaquin in Bowling Green, Missouri. Joaquin, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Oh, it's Jefferson City, Missouri.
I apologize, sir.
Yes, I'm an African-American, and Huckleberry Finn is a wonderful book. There is nothing wrong with the book at all. I mean, where are all the other black people calling and complaining about, you know, there being the N-word in the book?
Well, because I'm speaking up for you. I'm speaking up for you, and I'd say you could change that to Snowflake Jim.
We're not trying to have nobody speak up for us. I mean, if we have a problem with it, why can't we speak up for ourselves and say we want to change it? You're saying you speak
this goes beyond that.
Are you saying we're not able to speak for ourselves anymore?
I'm speaking for parents, white or black, who don't like that word. I don't think you have to be black. And I would say
word,
I think that Snowflake is a small...
The book was written back in that time, and you say Huckleberry Finn would come back and change the word to a Snowflake Jim?
No, Mark Twain.
It would change the entire book. I mean, why don't you change Roller Thunder, Hear My Cry, where black kids are getting beat and called the N-word, you know, on their way to school? Why don't you change that book? We read that book in elementary school just as we read Huckleberry Finn. Why are you discussing
what book is that?
Finn? There's many
what book
books
is
out there. Where we're
Rolling
the
Thunder, that was a... Rolling Thunder, that was a... I don't know what that was.
Yeah,
what was Rolling Thunder? I thought that wasn't that a stock car?
It's about black kids in the slavery days. You know, there's all segregation. They have to go to black schools and white schools, and white kids get to jump off the bus and beat up black kids and call them the N-word just because they have to go to a different school. You know, they can't afford, the same thing.
I would have the black kids beat the white kids up. And that way you'd have a...
I want to ask you something.
I haven't called you yet.
There's no other black person calling in, you know, trying to change this. Why are you
that lady from that
fact?
Last lady wasn't
why,
she black?
Why
she sounded black to me.
No, she was white.
If you want to help the schools, give the schools some money with all the money you made being a doctor.
Yeah, I'm an astronomer.
Our schools all around the world are struggling. We don't need a book. We need money
all around the world.
So our kids can be smarter.
How about America, not just the world? You know, I'd rather, you know, if I'm going to... But let me say this.
Okay, well, we're not worried about the N-word in the book. We're worried about our kids having an education and being able to...
I wrote a joke once.
If you want to help, it goes like this.
Give them clothes in starving countries. You could kiss that idea goodbye. I'll give money to America, but not to a starving... What starving country?
All right. Novel written by a wonderful
it is. Absolutely.
How many times has Saturn been married?
What is this? How many times has Saturn been married?
Well, that's a joke I wrote.
All right. How many times has Saturn been married?
It's hard to tell. It has so many rings. Okay? I wrote that joke.
You're talking about Huckleberry Finn. We're not talking about space here.
Huckleberry? First of all, you know that Huckleberry Finn didn't write the book. It's about him. Mark Twain wrote the book.
If it's about Huckleberry Finn, why do you want to change the N-word out of the book?
Because I think Snowflake is more applicable.
Explain your reasoning
more
why
modern.
You want to change it out.
And let me ask something else. Why is Spider-Man now black?
Yeah.
Didn't think of that one, did you?
Why is Iron Man not black right now?
Who cares whether Iron Man was black?
Ireland was black?
The original Green Lantern was black.
But I know that Ireland was green.
Of him being white, and nobody's complaining about that. We're not worried about it.
If Batman was black
today in cities all around the United States, that is not
Well, at least we're back to the United States and not the world.
If there was an issue, you would have more black people calling in saying, hey, we don't want to be called the N-word in this book. And as long as I've been listening to the radio station, I haven't heard one black person call
in. I haven't heard any white people call in and say we don't want to be called snowflakes. So I don't know what's wrong with people.
Maybe they just...
You had one white lady call in, and you told her she wasn't smart because she didn't have a doctorate. So it sounds like...
thanks for reminding me. Do you have a doctorate? Okay.
That's got nothing to do with anything.
I don't need a doctorate to be able to recognize that a book is great, and it was written
exactly.
at that time.
We don't need a weatherman to know which way the wind blows.
Okay, Bob.
And I can
thank you very much, Joaquin.
We don't need your help because you're discriminating.
Thanks very much, sir.
We don't have a doctorate.
877-876-PHIL. And so what about your joke?
Boy, that guy, is that somebody? You set that call up, didn't you?
No, I did not.
Phil, I wrote a joke 6 months ago, and it goes something like this.
I heard it.
How many rings does Saturn have?
It's hard to tell. How many rings does Saturn have?
Yeah. No, how many times... I hate you. The joke goes, how many times has Saturn been buried?
Hard to tell it has so many rings.
Okay. Stephen Hawking stole that and changed it to how many rings does Saturn have, just so people would carve it up. And now the joke is lost forever.
From the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
World famous Phil Hendry Show, every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Truth is our bitch on this show. And we go through the looking glass and beyond to take you places no other talk show could dare take you. This is Radio for Patriots by Patriots. Check out our show log following the show tonight. It is on our homepage at philhendryshow.com and lets you know exactly what you missed, what you can look for if you're looking and listening to the podcast. So when you download that podcast the next day, when the podcast is downloaded automatically, I should say, then you have that show log right there. Oh, here's what Phil and here's what was going on and so on and so forth. So it's very, very convenient. You can also check into our merchandise store and pick up the our legacy best of CDs, because you know the day and age of the legacy CD, the actual CD with artwork, those days are gone. In terms of what we do on the internet now, everything and all of the stuff that we're going to be making available in the future will be as a download. So actually owning one of our legacy CDs with the artwork and the CD itself still in the cellophane, with the exception of our 2000 2001s, which are autographed. It's a collector's item, so check it out at philhendryshow.com. July was a scorcher. High temperatures in communities across the USA broke or tied records 2,676 times, almost double the number, which was 1,444 a year ago. Temperatures in Newark set an all-time record of 108 degrees. That's Newark, New Jersey. In Atlantic City, it topped 105 for two straight days. The city of Washington endured its hottest July since 1871. In Oklahoma City, temperatures topped 100 for 27 of the last 30 days of July. Dallas-Fort Worth, on and on and on we go. And when we think about hot summer months, of course it's summer, and so we expect it to be hot. We also should be thinking a little bit, I think, about the safety of our kids, because a lot of our young people are involved in the preliminary stages of, for instance, a football season, or they may be involved in some preliminary training for another sport. They're outdoors. It is hot. And joining us to talk a little bit about that, especially being the varsity football coach at Belmar Academy, is Vernon Dozier joining us tonight. Vernon, from a construction site on campus?
Absolutely, Phil.
And what are you guys there at West Coast? It's 5 minutes after 11. What is going on?
Well, we're very proud to to announce that the finishing touches will be put on Vernon Dozier Gymnasium here at the end of this month, and in time for we feel it'll be in time for our basketball season, which will be starting in December. And I'm very proud to have my name on it, Phil.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Congratulations. A lot of years. You're a football coach, Coach Dozier. Did you coach any basketball?
When the school first opened, Phil, back in 1979, I was the first varsity basketball coach, and I gave that over to Glenn Glacier, who has spent the next 15 years as our varsity basketball coach, did a great job. I was the head football coach after that, and, of course, my record speaks for itself. I think I'm very proud of that.
All right, we do want to talk about football. You guys are involved in some light workouts right now, and, of course, anybody that ever played any football is aware of, you know, Hell Week, the two-a-days that that happen at the end of August. You guys aren't anywhere near that, are you?
No, Phil. We're just starting working out without pads. We bring in our quarterbacks. We bring in our receivers. We ask our running backs to come in. And the other young people, our defense is going through some study. We have a playbook that we do look at, but nonetheless, we've got them out on the field. We're running plays. And, of course, it depends on how the team is reacting.
And what do you do for the heat?
When you say what do we do for the heat?
How do you protect the kids from the heat?
Well, I can tell you, Phil, that the way we so-called protect kids from heat is we get them to it's a gut check. There's no question about it. It's a gut check. And
well, when you say gut check, what do you mean?
Let me just finish. It's a gut check, and I was about to tell you what I mean. It's a gut check because if a ball player gets it into his head that it is too hot, if a ball player so much as allows the thought into his mind that it is too hot, then you have lost him for good. You have lost that player for the game. You may have lost that player for the entire season because all you need is one of those to infect the others, and you've got an entire football team filled with these little boys that are worried about the heat. I will not allow it. I've been head football coach here for almost 30 years.
Well, but what I'm trying to say here is I understand what you mean about the players playing through the adversity of hot weather, cold weather, and all of those things.
Correct.
But nonetheless, we have had instances of players dying. We had the Minnesota Viking player, a professional player, die on the practice field back in 2001. And he's not the first and won't be the last, and at the high school and the collegiate level. So what steps do you take to protect the players when the temperatures, you know, because Vernon, we're...
Hold on, let me just take this one at a time, okay?
I mean, look at the story that I just read. These temperatures are over 100 degrees all over the country. And if you're beginning any kind of even light workout with football, you know...
Let me take this one at a time, because I think what happens is a level of panic sets in. I don't allow my players... I'll tell you a story that happened last season, because I won't have my players allowing themselves to be beaten by the thought of hot weather. I won't let my players allow their minds to weaken. I won't allow the thought to weaken the mind. Now, we had players last year, and you know Ty Colton, right?
Your quarterback.
That's correct. I threw him off our ball club, and I'll tell you why. I threw him off our ball club for the first six games of the season, I should say, and I'll tell you why. I had a bunch of these young ladies, is what I call them, when they're starting to complain. And the young ladies were starting to complain about the heat. And they were saying it's, you know. And what I do is I will exhort them from the sideline. And I will say, you're going to let this heat beat you, then the heat will beat you. Now, I want to see all of you get out there and play some football. It's called football. F-O-O-T-B-A-L-L. And this is what I do. And I will even... at times, try to get into their minds. I'll say things, for instance, oh, would I love to have an ice-cold root beer right now? Now, why am I doing that?
And, well, that's like torture.
Oh, hold on. No, it's not like torture at all. I want my players to focus. If they're out there on the field focusing on the play, focusing on their job, what do I have to do on this play? Okay, what part, where do I come? And I'm on the sideline, I'm saying, I would love me an ice-cold, frosty root beer with all that ice just makes it kind of drip down the side and freeze, you know? And then I'd like to get me an, one of those, just a freezing cold Mountain Dew, you know? Now, I can see, I look at the faces of all these players, and I can see if they are twitching. I can see if they look over at me. I know I got them, and those are the guys I pull off the field. And they sit, and they don't get anything to drink either, okay?
All right, look, you're telling me all these stories about...
These are not stories.
All right, they're not stories, but you're telling me what you're doing with ball players to toughen them up. What do you do to keep your players hydrated?
To keep my players hydrated? Are you talking about water?
Yes.
My players get water. But what I'm trying to get you to understand is, when they're out there and they're crying about water, I'm saying, really, do you want water? Well, I've got a case of Country Time lemonade, iced down, on its way over to me right now, and then I'll give a high sign. What I do is I if you've seen a pitcher, a manager, give the right-hand wave with two fingers because he wants a right-hander, that's what I'll do. I'll wave to the cheerleaders, and I give them the two-finger wave, and they come over with a golf cart with two cases of iced down Country Time lemonade. Now, it sounds like I'm trying to torture them. I'm not. What I do is I say, you see this? You don't get it. I get it. If you saw Glenn Ross, you saw, he says, you don't get the leads. The leads are for closers. Well, I do the same thing with Country Time Lemonade. I say, see this lemonade? You don't get any. I do. Because you're out there dogging it. You're out there putting it to the pooch. You're out there sleepwalking through these drills. Now, I want to see you people hit. I want to see you people stick. I want to see you people do your jobs. I want to see some blocking. I want to see some tackling. I want to see you people protect that quarterback. I want to see some passing lanes open up. I want to see some running lanes open up. And you defensive backs, I want you covering that man like you're his sweat. You're not closer than his shirt. You are the actual sweat in his armpit and in his crotch. And then I sit, and then I sit, and then I crack one of the Country Time lemonades. You just hear the and I'll go, yeah.
And all of that sounds like you're torturing those kids.
I'm not torturing anybody. I'm trying to get them to... I'm trying to get them to be a man.
All right, this Ty Colton kid gave you some lip, didn't he?
Yes, he did. He said to me, Coach, why don't you shut up? And I cut him from the team. Just like that.
I'll bet you he was happy to get off the field and get something to drink.
No, he wasn't, because I didn't let him go off the field. I cut him. Whose side are you on, anyway?
I mean, I'm saying that it sounds to me like you're torturing these kids when they're out there, it's 100-degree heat, and you're talking about Country Time lemonade iced down. You're talking about a nice cold root beer. You're talking about having the cheerleaders bring it over. You're yelling at these guys.
I'm telling these guys to focus on their jobs, not on the Country Time lemonade. That, yeah, I'm drinking on the side, and I make damn sure they see me drinking it, too. Also, I said to Colton, and that's why he got upset. I said, Colton, hey, you, Mr. Star Prospect, you. I mean, he had Notre Dame scouting him all his... Yeah, that's right, you. See this? Country Time lemonade. Yeah! And I poured that lemonade right straight. In one swallow, Phil, I poured it into my mouth, and I didn't stop pouring it until it was empty. And then I tossed the can over my shoulder, and that's when he looked at me and said, Coach, why don't you shut your mouth? And I said, okay, all bets are off. I want everybody off the field, because I'm going to talk to Colton.
And you cut him from the team?
I cut him from the team after practice ended. I wanted him sitting on the bench as I walked by with a Country Time lemonade. And I wanted him to see what I get to have because I've paid my dues, but he doesn't get to have.
We've got kids and we've got professionals.
I know, Mr. Henry, that are dropping dead all over the country. I understand. I got it. I got the mimeograph sheet. Okay?
I'm not just saying this. This is what happened. And we've got kids that are suffering. And when you've got them out on the field and it's 100-degree heat and now you're torturing them with thoughts of Country Time lemonade and ice-cold root beer, and you cut a kid because he told you to shut up, I think at that point you had pushed that kid to the limit.
You don't ever tell me to shut up. You don't ever tell me to shut up. I don't care if you're Joe Montana Jr. I don't care if you are the clone, if you're the miniature clone of Joe Dan Montana. Whoever you want to talk about, John Elway. I don't care if you are the exact duplicate of John Elway, only a little bit younger and, you know, with more muscle. I don't care. You never tell me to shut up. Never.
All right, Coach Vernon Dozier with us here from Belmar Academy as we talk about the heat and how he deals with it as he's coaching football during the summer months. He expects his players to gut it out even as he taunts them with fully iced down cases of Country Time lemonade. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445, the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
We can't fight this fight alone. Give us a call, 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
Hot out. Now,
I think what I've told you, Phil, is I try to get the kid. You want me to.
Well, what I want to know is if the kids are being hydrated with water.
Of course they're getting their water. Of course they are. Of course they are.
But what you're doing in addition to that is saying.
What I'm doing in addition. Hold on for a minute. Let me just slow down. Let me tell you what I'm doing instead of you guessing what I'm doing.
All right.
I'm telling them, if you're any kind of a man, and we need men because my school, Belmar Academy, we've won 6 straight league titles, undefeated 3 of those seasons, won Division 12. You know, the scouts know who we are. We got this quarterback of ours, Ty Colton. They're already sniffing around. I saw 2 men, you know, and I said this to Bob Babcock, and I don't apologize for it. I said to Bob, because I saw standing up in the parking lot looking down on the field, I said, Bob, do you see those 2 scum buckets? And
2 scum? Who were they?
They were a couple of priests from Notre Dame.
And they were a couple of priests from Notre Dame?
Yes. Oh, you got some sensitivity?
Boy, I tell you.
Phil, let me just explain something.
That is one hell of a way to describe a couple of priests from Notre Dame. Look at those 2 scum buckets.
Let me explain something to you. When Aaron Parseghian retired from Notre Dame, I put my name in the ring. And who'd they hire? This guy Faust from Cincinnati, who was a disaster. So I put my name in the ring again. And who'd they hire? Lou Holtz, who is a good man, but a nervous, chattering mouth. The guy never shuts up, walking up and down, walking up. He makes me as nervous as a long-tailed cat in a room full of rocket chairs. Then they hired after Lou Holtz some other douchebag, and then they hired some other douchebag, and they hired some other douchebag, and I never got my shot.
Oh.
What's so funny?
What's so funny? Every guy they hired was a douchebag, huh? And you only remember the name.
I don't know their names, okay?
Well, it's funny that you remember the names of Parseghian, Faust, and
Lou Holtz.
Lou Holtz. And then everybody else was a douchebag after that, huh?
I stopped counting the outrage that I had to suffer because I didn't get that Notre Dame job. Now they have the gall, to send a couple of scumbags with a turnaround collar to look.
You know, I was raised Roman Catholic. I'd rather you not refer to priests that way if you have no reason to.
What, were you an altar boy or something?
Maybe I was. But the point is, I'd rather you not refer to them that way if you have no reason to.
I believe I have reason to, because I got passed over for the coach. Are you listening to what I'm saying?
You got passed over for a coaching job that a lot of guys have been passed over for. That's the dream job in college football.
No, it isn't. SC is.
Okay, there's probably a lot of debate about that.
Well, some people think Florida's the dream job in football. I think going to Florida to coach that team down there would be living, breathing hell. Living hell. To go down to Florida and coach that pack of gator bait. But what I want to do.
All right, this is not about you. This is about your players, and this is about whether these kids are getting water and whether these kids are being tortured with you running around with the Country Time lemonade. All right, our number is 877-876-PHIL. Here is Jerry in Indianapolis. Go ahead, Jerry. You're on the Phil Henry Show.
Yeah, for one, I want to tell this guy to shut up because that's torture to the kids in. Is this the same coach about the C Cup at the time on girls? This guy should.
I had a program. I had an equipment check program. Yes, sir.
Yeah,
I don't know.
He'd be a coach. Torturing with.
Have you? Excuse me. Have you ever coached high school football?
Water? I played high school football. Our coaches didn't teach us with Gatorade or Country Time. We drank water.
Of course you drank water, and that's what my players drink. But I drink Country
Time.
And I
drink
Country Time Lemonade.
I
drink Country Time.
Yeah, but what you do with the coach is you torture them.
No, I don't. But what I will say to them is,
That's torture.
You see this can of Country Time Lemonade?
Here in Indianapolis, we've been having 107-degree weather, and the kids are being coached right now. But you don't see the coaches standing along, hey, I got Country Time, and you got nothing. That's torture, man.
Is this Andy Devine? Hey, it's not torture. It's teaching a young man how to butch up. It's teaching a young man how to man up and get in there and play some football and quit worrying about whether I got Country Time Lemonade or whether I'm having tea.
Well, you
got to
make no mistake.
Don't make
no
never mind.
If you're the same clown that did
clown.
With the C cup on girls, that should have been
that's
a
right.
woman, not a man.
Excuse me, sir, but
that's
young ladies need protection
that's
too.
Perverted.
Young ladies need protection too.
Yeah, well, yeah, they need protection, but it's not your discretion to go and fill up between their legs and see if they got their cup on by flipping it with your finger. I mean, that's
you remember every bit of it. You
right
remember.
Now. I watched
oh.
this. You've had some real stupid.
You remembered. You remembered every bit of that, don't you? You know why?
Oh yeah.
Because you
yeah,
go to sleep at night thinking about it.
No, I don't
you go
to
sleep at night
thinking about it. I'm going to sleep at night sleeping about it. I just listen
if
to this.
This isn't Andy Devine. If this isn't Andy Devine, then I'm a that
and,
I am one gone
I'm
mother.
I'm done with you, man.
All right.
You're just perverted.
Thank you for your call, sir. I appreciate it. 877-876-PHIL.
That guy was all Andy Devine. Is this the same place? God.
All right. We'll be back with more here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show about the Heat, football, Country Time Lemonade, and the and Andy Devine.
Phil Henry.
Mostly about Andy Devine.
Call the Patriot Hotline now, 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
And it's the world-famous Phil Henry Show. On the line with me is Vernon Dozier from Belmar Academy as we talk about, we really are talking about weather here, Coach, and I understand that you're keeping your players hydrated. What we're talking about more is the torture. Well, the emotional torture, the mental anguish or torture you put these kids through, standing there on the sideline, talking about frosty root beers, drinking a Country Time lemonade, and you mentioned that you have cheerleaders.
That is correct, yes.
Driving over a golf cart with cases of Country Time.
That is correct. Iced down. I want to, because you left that out, they're iced down. Now, you may think that I'm being cruel or that I'm, what I'm saying to the players is, you want to man up out there? You want to win another divisional title? You want to win another? You want to win a record-setting fourth straight title? Because it's within our reach. This team is that good. But you're going to have to show me something. And, boy, you better get, oh, man, you better show it to me, like right now. And as I said, like right now, that's when I gave the right-handed, two-fingered high sign, as if I was going to a righty in the bullpen. The girls jump into the golf cart on cue. And as I conclude my statement, which conclude with the statement, if you are any kind of a man, you won't let me down. On the word down, the girls are supposed to come to a full stop with the Country Time right in front of me. And that's when I stick my hand into the ice and pull one out. Now, at that point, the players think, hey, coach is going to give us a break. No, I'm not. I say, I know you are all ready to step forward and get your own. I said, this is for me. See all this? See? Here. This is the whole case, that's mine. I said, and whatever's left, they get. And I point to the two girls. Now, to you, that's torture. And
that not only is it torture, it's childish. It sounds as if you don't even sound responsible. You sound like you're wasting time. And
excuse me? Excuse
you? You sound like you're screwing around and wasting a lot of time, giving some speech.
It is a Mr. Henry... Are you a coach? Do you coach?
No, I'm not going to play. I don't need to be a coach to understand how you deal with kids, okay? I don't have to be a coach to understand how you deal with kids. I've worked with kids when it comes to sports, all right? And
but don't tell me you umpired Little League.
Yes, I did.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Don't be a child. What I'm talking about here is very important. And when you time it out and they pull up right on the last word and you reach in and you pull up the iced Country Time lemonade, all that does to those kids is make them weary. It tires them out mentally. And they probably wish they were at home or someplace other than where you are. Let's go to Tom in Akron, Ohio. Hi, Tom. You're on the Phil Henry Show. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Phil. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
You know,
yes, sir.
The more this guy talks, the more I can see why he was passed over to coach in the big time. And I'm going to tell you something. I knew coaches like this in football. And he talks about manning up. Well, I'm going to tell you something.
Right.
I served in Vietnam. You don't know what heat is. You don't know what heat. And another thing.
Well, if I had a nickel for every guy that said he served in Vietnam, I'd be a rich man.
Shut up a minute. I knew guys, when I come out of Vietnam in 66, I knew guys on the football team, a couple of them, more than a couple, that were hiding in college, scared to death they're going to get drafted. Did you ever serve your country? Did you ever take the oath? Because better men than me died. Better men than me were dismembered.
Oh, I believe that.
Vietnam,
I believe that.
Nothing but a jerk. I'll tell you what.
As long as I can keep you off a football team, I have done my job for my country.
You're a real man.
I don't think you were in Vietnam.
You're a real man.
You didn't go to Vietnam. You didn't go to Vietnam. Nah, you didn't go to Vietnam. If you did,
you want to tell me about being in Vietnam? You want to tell me about being in Vietnam?
Yes, I was in Vietnam. I was a commando. I was a commando.
You're a commando. You're nothing. I'm going to tell you what, buddy.
You know something, friend? Yeah.
That kid should have smashed your face in. That's what he should have done.
I would have beat his ass. I would have beat his ass. I would have beat his
equalizer.
Whoa. Let's watch the language, okay?
Oh. Well, you want to know something? I dance away from bullets. I could dance around a bullet. I danced around a mortar in Vietnam.
You're a total man. You got a lot of issues.
What do you mean you danced around a mortar?
I danced around a mortar explosion.
Yeah, right. You're a real man. Hey, man, I'm glad Notre Dame, who's not my favorite team, I'm just glad, thank God, they never gave you the chance. You're a jerk. You're nothing but a jerk.
Notre Dame will long regret.
And I know one thing. You were never in the service. You were hiding.
I was not officially in the service, no.
Yeah,
I was not officially in the service.
You were hiding.
You ever heard of Operation? I was assassinating Vietnamese officials. I was hiding. I was hiding in the bush.
You guys like you that went to Canada. And then that scumbag, Jimmy Carter, he pardoned them.
You know a lot of draft dodgers, man. Did you know anybody in the service? Because everybody you say you knew was a draft dodger. I knew guys that were actually in the military.
I knew there were draft dodgers, and Jimmy Carter pardoned them. He never should have. You ever gone to a VA hospital?
Oh, get over it.
Go to a
get
VA
over
hospital.
It.
Yeah.
Yes, I have been to a VA hospital, and I checked myself out. I checked myself out.
Help the next kid smashes your face in. Get you down to
you know something?
Your face in.
I went to the VA hospital. I told those guys to check themselves out if they didn't like
VA
it so much.
Hospital. You're a total man. I knew guys like you, like I said, hiding in college.
In Canada, yeah, I know. Yeah, they're in Canada, right. You already said that. You know, in college, how could you go to college?
I can't stomach this guy.
How do you go to college and also go to Vietnam? That's impossible.
I went to Kent State in 66. When I got out, I went on the GI Bill. I worked my whole time through. The GI Bill paid my tuition. I worked to pay for my books and everything else.
You know who I served with? Did you serve with Kurtz? I served with the real Colonel Kurtz in Cambodia. The guy who made the movie about it. The guy they made the movie about.
He should have smashed your face in. That's what he did.
That young man.
Take care of any
kid.
And they'll take care of you. Good night.
Any kid that tries to drink Country Time lemonade on my time.
Oh, yeah. And you're a big man. You're the big man.
Yes. When it comes to coaching football, I got it.
Do you ever take the oath to serve your country? Do you ever take the oath to serve your country?
Yes, I did. I took that oath. I was practicing it.
I said I want to go come back to. Sorry, Phil.
Well, I wouldn't either.
Guys, the coach is like.
How do you know you didn't? How do you know you didn't? Because the last time somebody got a look at you.
All right, let's knock it off with the jokes, huh?
This guy's got to be kidding.
Phil?
Why, I've got four guys like this. I can tell you right now, son. You'd be right in the pines. You'd be right in the pines if you played for me.
Passed over, jerk.
Because those two scumbag priests.
All right, enough of that. Thanks very much, Tom, and thank you for your service to our country. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. What was the point of that?
What was the point of what? That guy asked me had I been in Vietnam.
You were with the real Colonel Kurtz.
You know, that's nobody's business, Mr. Henry. If I was in Vietnam and I was with the real Colonel Kurtz, or if there wasn't a real, that's nobody's business. And he's asked me all these questions. Now, there's one thing I do know. I may not know as much about, let's say, warfare or whatever that guy learned in Vietnam, how to take money from little Vietnamese kids playing dice, or whatever he did, how to get rid of a particularly virulent strain of, say, a venereal disease a couple of days before you ship out, things like that. But I can tell you this. I know one thing, and I know football. And if that guy played for me, he wouldn't get any lemonade. Hello?
I'm here. I mean, are you serious? That guy was angry because you were torturing those kids, taunting those kids.
That guy was calling, and the four-letter words that guy used, S-F-M-F-S-S, you look like an S-bag. He called me an S-bag. He called you one, too.
No, he didn't.
I thought I heard him say that.
No, he did not.
He called me an MFS bag. He called me an F-wad. He said that the things that man said about me. And why did he say them? I'll tell you why he said them. Because he's jealous. Jealous of the fact that I could have been head coach.
Will you stop with the speech-making here, Coach? Because what has happened now is it sounds like you are trying to elude the actual truth of the matter here.
What do you mean the truth of the matter?
The truth of the matter being that you're not a very good coach. He's right. You got passed over for the Notre Dame job, and you still haven't been able to effectively defend why it was you were using, why it was you were taunting those kids with that lemonade. I mean, I understand that they are being hydrated with water. You made your point, okay?
Then what else do you want?
But why are you standing on the sidelines with this choreographed skit having to do with Country Time Lemonade?
Choreographed? What do you think, I'm in a Broadway show or something?
You had those girls coming over on cue, pulling up on cue, reaching down, getting the Country Time Lemonade. And when that kid finally said, hey, coach, why don't you shut up, you cut him.
I didn't cut him. I sat him down for 6 weeks. I couldn't cut him. The kid's too good. No one tells Vernon Dozier to shut up without some consequence. You tell me to shut up. There is consequence.
Okay, shut up.
All right, there will be a consequence.
Are you threatening me?
I'm not. I didn't say I was going to come and kick your ass. I said there's just going to be a consequence.
What is that going to be?
You're going to want to have tickets to one of our games?
No, I'm not.
The hell you're not?
I don't want any tickets to your stinking games.
Didn't you ask me for 50-yard line seats last year?
No, I didn't.
Why are you lying?
I never asked you for any 50-yard line seats. I don't want tickets to Belmar Academy. What I want to know, though, is how those players are being treated better, say, next season or this season, and how they are no longer being taunted or tortured or put through some kind of a gauntlet where they got to watch you guzzling Country Time Lemonade. And
I didn't guzzle it.
You said that you turned the can on its end and you swallowed the whole thing in one straight draft or drink.
Draft.
All right. We'll be back. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Radio for Patriots by Patriots. It's the Phil Henry Show. Call the Patriot Hotline, dial 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
World famous Phil Henry Show here with Vernon Dozier from Belmar Academy. We're talking with Coach Dozier about the football season and the weather, the hot weather that we've been experiencing across the country, and what you do in the middle of summer when you've got football players. You, Coach, have made no bones about the fact that you taunt the players with...
No, I've never used the word taunt, Phil. You use the word taunt. I say that what I'm doing is I'm tempering those young men.
And you're sitting on the sideline, you're drinking Country Time Lemonade and root beer, and you're sitting in the golf cart with your arm around the cheerleaders.
That's right.
I mean, what does that look like to a young player?
What it says is, if you're good enough, someday you can be Coach Vernon Dozier. Now... this is the part that boggles my imagination. This last guy I talked to, the Vietnam vet, and some of these other people. Let me just repeat what I said to you, and I'll say it again. My name is Coach Vernon Dozier, and I'm the head coach of Belmar Academy. Now, they're naming a gymnasium after me. They've already named the field after me. And some people had called and said they were aware of the fact that I had paid a $200,000 fee for that. Yes, I had. It doesn't make any difference. They're still naming the football stadium after me. And when I give another $200,000, you notice that I'm not trying to cover this up. And
you're saying that you paid a fee to have the stadium named after you?
Please don't make it sound like it's unusual, Mr. Henry. Please don't do that. Don't embarrass yourself. Don't embarrass, you know, your family. That's how things get done. You don't think someone's going to come along and say, hey, Coach Dozier, we want to name the football stadium after you, and it's going to be free of charge. Do you think that's how it's done, huh?
What are you saying? You're saying that people will...
People will say to a prominent individual, we should name that stadium after you, whoever. Let's say Walter Payton. We should name the Chicago Bears Stadium Walter Payton Stadium. And Walter Payton would say, well, that'd be a great honor. And they'd say, yes, it would. It would be a great honor. And I want to name that stadium Walter Payton Stadium. I think I'd like to do that. And you keep saying that, and you keep looking at Payton. Of course, he's no longer with us. But were he alive, we would, well, I guess that doesn't work, does it?
All right. Well, what's the point? So in other words, you're looking at the guy, and you're waiting for the cat to say, I'll pay for that?
Yes, well, you're not waiting. Any halfwit. Anyone with half a brain, any run-of-the-mill, rank-and-file dimwit, knows that you got to cough up when it comes to naming rights for a stadium.
And well, I know that you have to cough up when it comes to commercial naming rights, sure. You know.
What do you mean, sure? What are you talking about?
I didn't know that you had to cough up if they named a ballpark after you.
You most certainly do have to cough up. Nothing gets done in this world of ours, young man, unless... You greased the wheels. Where you been?
So, in other words, when they said that we wanted to name the football stadium after Vernon Dozier...
Yes, they said to me, Coach Dozier, you've been here a long time, and we want you. We want your name on that stadium, Coach Vernon Dozier Stadium. I said, I am honored. And I sat down with my checkbook, even before he had finished with the sentence, we want to honor you, and I was sitting down as he was saying, by naming... the stadium after you. I was already writing a check. I was already writing a check off of a couple of certificates of deposit we had. So
you knew what it was all about.
I know which. Yeah, I know. I know how the game's played. I know how one hand washes the other. Now I've got a gymnasium that's being laid out, that's being named after me, and I also paid a lot of money for that. Okay. You want to know about all the other things I paid a lot of money for? Some of it you may not want to hear about because it's not good for a family audience, but I paid for a lot of my good times.
And all right, so you've paid, and so now you have a stadium named after you. I don't understand what's the point.
Well, if I've got two stadiums named after me, do you think I know something about football? Yes, I do.
And you paid to have the stadiums named after you.
It doesn't make any difference. Hold on for a minute. Would you guys knock off with a jackhammering? It's midnight. Midnight! See, they want to get the state. They want to get this gymnasium up, Phil. I don't blame them.
Well, I will tell you this much: you lost one of your players. You could very well lose another player, and I would hate like hell to read in the newspaper that one of your players is dead as the result of
Don't you ever say that.
I will say it because it's happened. Players have died from the heat, and I would hate like hell to see that happen to you and see that happen to your program. Your program would be over.
Mr. Henry, if you are articulating that because you want it to happen, I will have you know...
I do not want it to happen. I would hope that you will take the necessary precautions so that it doesn't happen.
Why? Because I'm not letting them drink Country Time lemonade. They get their water. I drink the lemonade. They drink the water. I drink the root beer. They drink the water. I drink the Diet Coke. They drink the water. I drink the Orange Crush. They drink the water. I drink the Orange Julius. They drink the water. See? I went out. I got myself an Orange Julius. An Orange Julius. Now, do you know what an Orange Julius is?
I don't give a damn what an Orange Julius is.
Jesus.
Good for you, man. And like I said, I hope none of your players die.
Well, in the words of Ike Clanton, I hope you die.
Coach Vernon Dozier from Belmar Academy on the occasion of yet another football season, and they've begun their... They have begun their practice early in the month of August, as many schools... do. It's been extremely hot. We've had fatalities in the past on the football fields, the practice fields of football teams because the ball clubs, the schools get going midway through the summer. The professionals, the pro ranks, of course, get going even earlier than that. And so you do have this danger. And some guys think that it's a badge of honor or it's some kind of a manly stripe to not allow your players or your the people in that you're in charge of to drink water. That is that's a destructive thing, and you're just going to wind up killing people. So we're certainly hopeful that that doesn't happen with Coach Vernon Dozier. It's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Coming up, we've got our News and Information Hour. Our News and Information Hour with Bud Dickman and with Robert Leonard. Some of the stuff we're going to be talking about, we sort of referenced this last hour with Ron Tarner, the new half-black, half-Hispanic Spider-Man swinging into comic book stores following the death of Peter Parker. Obama signs the debt bill, so they finally, the Senate finally passed that. Naked performance art on Wall Street ends with three people arrested. So we've got that to talk about. And a man sues a hotel over a 75-cent newspaper. None of that seems very interesting. Maybe we'll dig for some other news. Don't forget our website, philhenryshow.com. I'm sorry, bud, it just doesn't.
Well, I was looking for the best news.
Well, none of that's any good. Don't forget our website, philhenryshow.com. You can pick up a backstage pass and listen to live streaming audio of the show, as well as watch live streaming video of our show, and also thousands of hours of archives there at philhenryshow.com. And don't forget our merchandise shop. We've got our shot glasses, we got our coffee cups, we have got we've got a number of things there, our legacy CDs, our t-shirts, all of that stuff there that you can pick up and wear while you're listening to the show, which is really geeky. You know,
I got a friend of mine puts on a t-shirt to listen to you.
He puts on a Phil Hendry t-shirt.
Yeah.
Okay, well, you know, whatever. I mean,
what are you saying? That's not good? You saying it's not cool?
That's cool. Whatever you want to do. Put on your Phil Hendry t-shirt.
Yeah, drinks out of a coffee. Phil Hendry coffee cup, too.
All right, put on your Phil Hendry t-shirt. Drink out of your Phil Hendry coffee cup. Have yourself a shot of tequila out of your Phil Hendry shot glass. We'll be back. 877-876-PHIL.
Phil Hendry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
World famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. A news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Truth is our bitch on this here show. And we go places other talk shows wish they could, but they can't. Radio for Patriots by Patriots. Thank you very much, Coach Dozier. Good luck. And, of course, Dr. Ron Tarner, our guest earlier. And if you want to follow as to what we do on our show each and every night, we have our show log, which we put on our homepage. Following the broadcast, within 30 minutes, the show log is up, and we have a search engine feature on our website as well. As we are loading in our archive material, the actual log itself will pop up automatically. All those search terms that you might use in looking for a piece of audio. So, check out our search engine as well at philhendryshow.com. Now, yesterday we were discussing DB Cooper. And by the way, Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard are here. You guys still into the story?
I'm still into the story, but you explained it yesterday. You said it's pretty much, you know, it's done.
Yeah, you said it. The guy's not alive.
The guy, I don't think the guy's alive, but the FBI still would like to identify who he is.
It's D.B. Cooper.
That ain't his real name. That's a fake name he gave.
Yeah, well, you don't know, though. I mean, he might have given the real name.
No, he didn't give the real name. How do you know he gave the real name? The cops, even if he did give the real name, obviously that name didn't come up with anything because it's been 40 years and they still don't know a thing about this guy.
Well, they know a guy comes from Seattle.
How do you know he comes from Seattle?
That's where the plane took off from.
That doesn't mean he comes from there. Maybe he flew in there from somewhere else. He comes from Seattle.
Well, I mean, what more do they need to know about the guy? If he ain't alive, it doesn't make any difference. They can't put him on trial.
I know they can't put him on trial, but what they would like to do is identify who he is. As I said to you guys last night, if you can identify who the guy is, it gives you some idea, perhaps, it gives you some idea as to his motivation. Why did he do what he did? Why did he do what he did? Why did he did what he did? You know.
Yeah, and then why didn't he do what he didn't do?
Exactly. So here we have the FBI's promising lead in the D.B. Cooper skyjacking case has led to a man who died, 10 years ago, according to an FBI spokesman.
What?
Hold on. Special Agent Fred Gutt said the, I guess if they go to Fred Gutt for something, they call it a gut check, huh?
Yeah, probably go do a gut check.
Yeah.
Anyway, Special Agent Fred Gutt said the Bureau's Seattle office has been investigating for more than a year a lead that has more credibility and detail than any other tips regarding the unsolved skyjacking of a Seattle-bound flight on Thanksgiving Eve of 1971. So, this is the FBI investigating a lead that is a year old now. So we're just now hearing about this, that they said had more credibility and detail than any other tip regarding this skyjacking. Now, Special Agent Gutt declined to identify the man who died of natural causes. There is a basic story, he says, that seems logical. If the man is identified as the legendary hijacker in America's only unsolved skyjacking, it would mean he lived some 30 years after parachuting from the plane with $200,000 in cash, defying those who concluded he couldn't have survived the leap. That would make me wrong from what I said last night. You know.
Yeah, but you said that. Oh, yeah, you did say he died.
Yes, so I...
Yeah, you're wrong, man.
Ha, ha. Ha, ha.
So what? I didn't bet any money on it. I hope I didn't. Anyway, if this guy is identified, this man who died 10 years ago, as the legendary hijacker in America's only unsolved skyjacking, would mean he lived some 30 years after parachuting from the plane with $200,000 in cash. Well, one thing we do know that he did not land with all of that money. At least some of it was lost. Gutt said the FBI's vetting of the case warrants further investigation, noting little contradictory information has emerged that would rule out the possible suspect. But he said that doesn't mean the case is about to be solved. The FBI laboratory has determined that a guitar strap that belonged to the man is not conducive to lifting fingerprints to compare to partial prints found in the plane. A guitar strap that belonged to this man is not conducive. So what we have, is this the piece of evidence that they had?
Well, they said they had a piece of evidence. They didn't say what it was.
It might be the guitar strap if the guy played guitar, but if he didn't play guitar, it's not Keith Richards, right? I mean,
what do you think, man? Is it Keith Richards?
Man, he ain't the only guy to play guitar.
I know, but he just wrote a book.
Oh, well, that must mean he's D.B. Cooper. He just wrote a book. Do you think it's Keith Richards? You know what? I'll tell you this much, though, bud. That's not a bad idea, because Keith Richards looked like he fell out of an airplane, doesn't he?
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, I thought that was funny. Anyway, the FBI laboratory has determined that a guitar strap that belonged to the man is not conducive to lifting... All right, so they have a guitar strap that belongs to this guy that they say is very, very intriguing as a suspect. However, they can't lift any prints from it because a guitar strap, a leather strap, is not conducive to lifting a fingerprint. It doesn't mean it's a dead end, Gutt said, adding that the case agent is working with the man's family to obtain other items with better surfaces to lift fingerprints. The FBI has learned that the man reported an auto injury in 1971, perhaps to explain injuries suffered in the jump, according to King TV.
So he was, like, covering up whatever injury he got.
Could be. He reported an auto injury in 1971, perhaps to explain injuries suffered in the jump, King TV reported. Gutt said the FBI is still actively pursuing a number of different leads in the fabled skyjacking, in which the hijacker jumped from the rear of a Boeing 727. FBI spokeswoman Ann Sandola Dietrich said on Sunday that agents were investigating the promising lead a day after a British newspaper reported the development in a lengthy feature story on the notorious case.
Wait a minute, I want to ask a question.
Go ahead.
If this guy, he could have hijacked the plane that didn't go the way he wanted to, right?
He could have hijacked the plane and didn't go the way he wanted to, yeah.
All right. And all he has to do is go home, and the wife thinks, oh, what happened to you? He's in the hospital. I got in an automobile accident.
Yeah, he could have done it all, like, in just one day.
Well, in other words, what you guys are saying, he could have covered it up. So he was gone.
Yeah.
He was gone, as maybe his wife. Who knows if he has a wife? Nobody knows anything. Maybe he didn't. Maybe there wasn't anybody that missed him. But, of course, if he's reporting an automobile injury to cover up an accident skyjacking, there's at least one or two people that he has to cover this up for. It could be an employer. They may be family members. Who knows? But no, if you're saying that it was not an inordinate amount of time, it wasn't. Hey, what happened to you? Oh, I got in an automobile accident. You're not going to believe it. I've been in the hospital. I don't know how that comes down. I mean, what do you do? Just walk into a hospital? Maybe he walked in or something.
Yeah, he could have told him, like, his car went off a cliff and he dove out. And then he just walked into the hospital.
That ain't going to work, man.
They're going to wonder where the car is.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. Thank God you guys are here, man. My car went off a cliff. I dove out and I walked here. Where's your car, sir? Oh, you know, it's back there. I think it blew up and disintegrated.
You could say that.
Yeah, sure. He could say that. He could also say, I just flew here.
Where?
Never mind, Robert, okay? Just let me finish the story. FBI spokeswoman Ann Sandola Dietrich said on Sunday that agents were investigating the promising lead. All right. Dietrich said the FBI received a tip from a member of law enforcement about a credible person with information on the case. The passenger who jumped from the Northwest Orient Airlines jet on November the 24th, 1971, identified himself as Dan Cooper. A day after the skyjacking, FBI agents checked out a Portland man with the name D.B. Cooper. Although that man was quickly cleared, the name stuck in news media accounts. The tall, dark-complexioned man paid $20 cash for a one-way flight from Portland to Seattle. The jet was barely in the air before he told a flight attendant he had a bomb and showed her a briefcase holding several red cylinders and a nest of wires. We know all this stuff. When the plane landed in Seattle, the passengers were exchanged for parachutes and ransom money paid by the airline. The plane took off, headed south toward Mexico with the hijackers and the crew, with the hijacker and the flight crew. About 30 minutes later, a cockpit warning light showed the rear stairway was fully extended. The pilot asked over the intercom, is everything okay back there? The hijacker yelled back, no, and bailed out the back from 10,000 feet into freezing darkness. It wasn't until the plane landed for more fuel in Reno, with the rear stairway still down, that the crew and FBI knew he was gone. Authorities estimated he landed near the small community of Ariel, Cowlitz County, east of Woodland, in a rugged, wooded region of, Washington State. The man was never found, and only $5,800 of the ransom money, whose serial numbers the FBI had recorded, turned up when a child digging in a sandbar on the north bank of the Columbia River in 1980 unearthed a bundle of $20 bills. The FBI has partial fingerprints from a magazine left on the plane and parts of the airliner cabin. The other thing that they don't have is any of that money turning up spent, you know?
Yeah, but he could have put it in a laundry.
Yeah.
He could have put it in a laundry. You mean he laundered it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe he went to Mexico. You know what I'm saying? Go down to Mexico and stick it in a bank down there. I don't know. I mean, it's probably not the most difficult thing in the world. I'm telling you, though, I find it hard to believe that this guy survived. I find it hard to believe that he was able to spend any money at all. I find it hard to believe that he even existed. I find it hard to believe that I even read that news story to you two idiots because you are trying to tell me that he's Keith Richards.
Well, I just figured it. The guy fell out of a plane.
Right. All right. Our number, 877-876-PHIL here on a world-famous Phil Henry Show. Which state leads the nation with parents too stupid to vaccinate their kids? Which one is it, huh? I'll give you a hint. My producer, Jason Rance, lives there. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Radio.
Also a Ted Bundy
for
story.
For Patriots, by Patriots. It's the Phil Henry Show. Woo! Radio. For Patriots. Hi, Patriots. It's the Phil Henry Show.
It is the world-famous Phil Henry Show here every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. The news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Thank you. And good evening. And, of course, philhenryshow.com for Phil TV and HD, which is on right now. And we're very intrigued by the D.B. Cooper story, and we were talking about it during the break, Rance and I and Dan, and we have come to the conclusion that it was Deep Throat. who hijacked that plane, played by Hal Holbrook in the movie. No, I'm kidding. I don't know who it is, but obviously the FBI like whoever it is that they like, and they want more stuff from the guy's house. So it seems maybe they've got a search warrant, and they're going to try to turn up other fingerprints. If they find a fingerprint that matches, then we know who this chap was. He did survive, and I'm dead wrong, and that won't be the first time. All right. Washington State is experiencing an epidemic of worry over vaccine safety. The state leads the nation in the percentage of parents opting out of vaccinations for their kindergarten-age children, but a new state law could be poised to change that distinction. Finally. Finally.
What?
What do you mean, what? We got whooping cough is coming back. You don't know what the hell else can come back because some groovy new age mom doesn't want her kids vaccinated because she's afraid the kid's going to get the autism. She doesn't know. She's got a doctor here, Jenny McCarthy there, a book over here, and everybody's an expert. So they don't get their kid vaccinated. The next thing you know, we have an upsurge in diseases that we've been able to keep under the mat for almost 50 years.
Yeah, but they're going to have a law, man, to make them do it.
I hope so. I hope like hell they get a law going. A public health law. You're going to do what? Well, my child is not. Well, isn't that nice? So your child comes to school infected with God knows what. And another kid that didn't get a vaccine, he's infected with God knows what. And the next thing you know, we got ourselves a big-time infection comeback of what? Whooping cough, I know, made a comeback. You want to see mumps? How about measles? How about chicken pox? You know, measles can kill a kid. You know that, don't you? Measles almost killed me when I was a kid. I'll never forget, I was 10 years old, and I was delirious. I had a fever of 104 degrees. I'm not kidding.
What do you mean you were delirious?
I mean, I was delirious. I mean, I got out of the bed. I remember getting out of the bed and walking through the house, and my mother grabbing me and putting me back into the bed. And my sister was worse off than me. She had her fever was worse. It was no fun. No fun. I was a 10-year-old kid, and I got the measles. And I was out of school for 2 weeks, and it sucks. I had chicken pox.
You get the mumps?
I never got the mumps. That's the thing. I never got the mumps.
Wait a minute. You could still get a mump from a kid then.
What do you mean a mump? You mean mumps?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess. Technically, yeah, I could. I haven't had to worry about that because there have been vaccines. They didn't have mumps vaccine when I was a kid. And then, of course, you know, when I got married and there were four children in that house, and I began thinking, oh, my God.
What?
Well, if I'm sitting there in a house full of kids and I've never had a mumps vaccine and they're going to school and they're, you know, God knows what they were bringing back into that. I'll tell you, the first year that I was married, I was sick every single solitary day. Every day I was sick.
Why?
At the thought of being married. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I was sick because...
Man, you're going to hear that, man.
I'm kidding. I was sick because of all the diseases that the kids were bringing back from other diseased kids. Kids are great. Kids are marvelous. Kids are our future. There's no question. But they are just a collection of little disease carriers. Kids are nothing more than the walking dead, if you want to get right down to it. Little kids, as cute as they are, they might as well be zombies, carrying...
Yeah, probably carrying like a rage virus.
Carrying the rage virus, who knows? And they come walking in with their little zombied out, we're kids, and, you know, here comes God, you know, impetigo and festering, oh, geez. So Washington State leads the nation in parents opting out of vaccines. Well, you know, I don't mean to be a smartass, but what gives you the right to opt out of a vaccine? Who are these people? More than 6% of Washington kindergartners were missing one or more immunizations in the 2009-2010 school year. The most commonly skipped vaccine was the chickenpox vaccine. Since 1997, there's been a steady statewide decline in the number of school children who are fully vaccinated. A new state law that went into effect in July seeks to close a loophole that parents use to avoid providing proof of vaccinations to schools. Now, parents must meet with a medical provider, get a signed letter confirming the consultation took place, and provide the note to child care centers or schools. Dr. Jack Stevens, a pediatrician at the Everett Clinic, said the world has changed. It used to be the unimmunized child was the child of an economically disadvantaged family with poor access to health care. Nowadays, the kid is from a well-educated family, but the parents are still idiots. No, he didn't say that, but... They do their own independent research and tell you what they're willing to do. Oh, is that right? Let me explain something, folks. You want to get an epidemic going, that's a great way of doing it. You want to get an epidemic, it's a great way of doing it. You know, they got, they are, I told you about the work that Rotary and Maria was involved in this, getting rid of polio in India. And polio, India is one of the, I think is the last remaining country on the face of the earth where there has been a case of polio. They had a couple of cases, I don't know, 2-3 years ago. Why? Because not all of the people were getting immunized. And the reason for that was that the Muslim clerics, the Muslim leaders, and these were mostly in Muslim areas, said that this polio vaccine wasn't a vaccine at all. It was a way to the infidel used to wipe out Muslims, to kill them. This kind of nonsense. And so these poor Muslim families stayed away from the polio vaccine for a while, but then they finally were able to get the word into these communities. No, that isn't a way. It's not going to kill you. This is to get so you don't wind up. And if you've ever seen some of the people, have you ever seen, you remember that show, Bud?
Yeah, that one guy was like walking on his ankles.
Oh, that's terrible deformity. Horrible deformity as a result of polio in India and Pakistan. So now they finally got rid of all of this jazz and all these jackasses, and they're immunizing the kids again. And they just had a big push on here. I don't know when the hell it was. Was it last winter? They went into India and they immunized, I don't know how many millions of kids against polio. This is what you're supposed to do. You don't play it like you're doing your own independent research. These people, you wouldn't know. People, don't do it. Because you're going to put not only your own kid at risk, you put God knows how many other kids at risk. And the next thing you know, we got a public health emergency. Because some brain surgeon in the suburbs decided, oh, well, my child doesn't get the chickenpox vaccine. Don't you know that that causes their heads to swell up to the size of a watermelon? And their eyeballs, oh, yeah, you should have seen the Jenny McCarthy book I was reading. I mean, with all due respect to Ms. McCarthy, and I know that she suffered with an autistic child, and we all wish her the best, but be responsible and get your kids immunized. Washington leading, and you know what that says, Washington State, with all due respect? That says basically you lead the nation in dumb parents. So,
Well, that's not what it means.
That's exactly what it means.
Well, that's pretty judgmental.
Oh, is that pretty judgmental?
I think it's pretty judgmental, yeah.
Really? Well, I don't think it's pretty judgmental. Washington leads nation in parents opting out of vaccines. That means to me, Washington leads nation in dumbbell parents.
I think you're being judgmental.
Great, I'm being judgmental. That's my job, man. I'm supposed to be judgmental. You know?
Well, I don't think it's very fair of you.
Well, what are you guys giving? Get out of here giving me your opinion. What I say goes, okay? I say Washington State leads the nation in responsible parents.
Right.
I mean, at least. All right, coming up, we've got serial killer Ted Bundy. Yes, back from the grave. He'll be sitting in for an interview here. Actually, we are going to have Ted Bundy on one of these nights in one of our As You'd Like to Hear Them interview segments. But for now, this is a story about Ted Bundy's DNA. Where is it going? Well, the National Database. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. For patriots, by patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show.
Speaking of patriots,
What?
That's a Buffalo Bill. Never mind.
Yeah, what's the thing you're looking at, man?
I was just looking at some old football footage, and like right there, that's the scrambling Jackie Kemp, and he's being tackled by a patriot. So, all right.
That's the Boston Patriots. That's not the ones now.
It's the same franchise, man.
What do you mean?
It's the same team. It's not a different team. It's the same franchise.
No, they don't call it that, though.
They don't call it the Boston Patriots anymore. They call them the New England Patriots now. Okay?
Well, okay.
It's the same team. Trust me. Yeah, that's right, bud. They closed down the Boston Patriots and started a whole new team called the New England Patriots. Have nothing whatsoever to do with the other team. I don't think so. Okay. A vial of serial killer Ted Bundy's blood, speaking of football. A vial of serial killer Ted Bundy's blood has been found in Florida, and investigators will use... What do you mean, found? It's been found in Florida, and investigators will use the newly discovered evidence to try to solve cases that went cold decades ago. Before he was executed in 1989, Bundy confessed to more than 30 murders and was suspected of many more. A complete DNA profile couldn't be developed for the serial killer until the blood was found. The full profile will be uploaded to the FBI's national database on Friday, giving authorities key evidence to possibly link Bundy to long unsolved crimes. So this national database that police agencies all over the country access for DNA matches, now Ted Bundy's has been loaded in. And
So anybody anywhere, huh?
Any police agency that has access to the FBI national database, and generally that means they will access their own state police or their state crime task force or whatever, and they go to the FBI database, and this database contains the DNA samples of, geez, I don't know who. I mean,
well, is they all criminal or what?
I don't know if everybody's a criminal. I always used to think the national database, because they have the fingerprints, and those aren't all criminals. My fingerprints are there. If you've been arrested, well, I just had to.
Oh man, you got arrested, man.
You got busted.
You know that when I was very young, yes, I did.
Man, you never said nothing about that.
Yes, I did. I said it on the air.
So your fingerprints are in the national fingerprint in case they find a dead woman. They'll go and check for Phil Henry.
Yeah, that's what they're going to do, bud. Yeah, I'm number one on their list. I'm number one on their list. In any event, so the FBI's national database will give authorities with this Ted Bundy DNA sample a possible link to long unsolved crimes. Possible. It's possible that Ted Bundy had nothing to do with some of these crimes. The vial was, however remote, it is possible. Anyway, the vial was discovered after Florida authorities took the sofa cushions and had them washed at a guy's house, and they found... I'm kidding. No, it doesn't. It says that they...
Where did they found it under a guy's sofa?
No, I'm joking around. The vial was discovered after Florida authorities received a call from a detective working a cold case in Tacoma, Washington. The blood had been taken in 1978 when Bundy was arrested for the death of a 12-year-old girl in Columbia County, Florida, according to the News Tribune in Tacoma. Despite an order to destroy much of the biological evidence in the Florida case, the vial was still on file with David Kaufman, chief of forensic services at the Florida Department of Law Enforcement's Tallahassee Crime Lab. We were really surprised. Why would they destroy the biological evidence? Did they think it was...
Maybe they thought it was like a disease.
Could have been. Anyway, this gentleman, Mr. Kaufman, said that we were really surprised. Kaufman cautioned that it will be a challenge to find full DNA samples from so long ago, making a match unlikely. But if there is a match, authorities, they will know right away. The Tacoma detective was investigating the 1961 disappearance of Anne Marie Burr, a six-year-old who vanished from her home in the middle of the night. Bundy is among several possible suspects. The Tacoma detective said they had letters Bundy had sent that might contain his DNA on the stamps or envelope and could be used to develop a forensic profile and possibly discover if he was linked to the Burr case. Wow, 1961, how old was this guy anyway?
He could have been like a teenager.
Kaufman said the agency said it had some items to examine, too. There was a display case with evidence from Bundy's trial in their lab. Among the items, dental molds of Bundy's teeth and the wax impressions that had been used to make them. After hanging up with her, I went to our display and looked at it, Kaufman said. I said, there's got to be something. DNA's gotten so sensitive now. They had a mold made of Bundy's teeth because they found bite marks on one of the victims, and I think they were able to match the teeth, Ted Bundy's teeth, to the bite marks. He decided to try the molds for traces of saliva, but there were a number of fingerprints on them, so it wasn't a great sample. At about the same time, the Florida agency discovered the Columbia County Clerk's Office had an original blood sample taken from Bundy. It resulted in a complete forensic profile with all 13 core markers used in tests against the DNA database. A bulletin will be sent to law enforcement agencies across the country when the DNA is uploaded. Tacoma police are among those waiting. Detectives are sending evidence to the state crime lab to see if there is still DNA on it 50 years later. This is really important now, you know, for families especially, to find out what happened to their daughters. And as we said on the show once before, this was a deal struck by Gary Ridgway with the Washington authorities. Some people didn't like it. I didn't like it at the time, but until I got to thinking about what it was they were able to get in return for promising Gary Ridgway.
You said Ridgway.
Did I? man, the stuff that you get kicks out of.
What are you talking about, man?
Oh, Gary Ridgway.
So what? Gary Ridgway. Dude, I'm in the middle of talking about murders and stuff. Do you mind?
Sorry.
Anyway, what they said to Ridgway was, you know, as we've told you, if you tell us, if you will lead us to the bodies of your victims, we will promise you life in prison. Now, a lot of people might not have liked that. I thought at the time I didn't quite get it. Now I do. I understand. These families, they're beside themselves. They're just heartsick, and they're distraught, and they have no idea what happened to their family members. So when Ridgway started coughing up this information, they were able to solve some missing person cases and what happened to some of these women. So this is important stuff. If they can find out where perhaps some of these bodies lay, or who they are, who the women are, etc., then that's it's good for them. So that's, you know.
Well, that story kind of petered out, didn't it?
Peter out? What do you mean petered out?
There ain't really all that much more to say.
I said what I wanted to say about it, okay?
Still got 5 minutes to break.
So what if I got 5 minutes to the break? I said all I wanted to take that outside. Take the trash out. I got more stuff I want to say.
What?
About, I'll show you what the story is. What do you mean petered out? We said what we wanted to say about it. Here's one that I love, man. A California judge this week ordered the shutdown of Zadiva, a company which played back DVDs by streaming them over the internet. Now, what does that mean? Judge John Walter ordered the service from Zadiva and a collection of Hollywood studios suing it to meet and draft a preliminary injunction before August 10th. Zadiva was also ordered to post a $50,000 bond. Now, here's what Zadiva did that was wrong. The copyright infringement laws, the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, all of these things are completely misunderstood by people that use the internet. And as a result, they run afoul of copyright infringement. And then when they are told that they've run afoul of copyright infringement, they're sort of taken by surprise. They don't know, what does that mean? What did I do? I thought we had something called safe harbor. Most people that I've talked to don't even understand what safe harbor is. Safe harbor does not mean you get to do anything that you want to do. Safe harbor means if you had or were hosting or were otherwise making available to the public a video clip, an audio clip, some piece of copyright protected material. And then the copyright holder told you, hi, that's mine, would you please take it down? You have had safe harbor. Oh, okay, you take it down. So no one sues you or goes after you for having hosted a clip that was copyright protected, and you didn't know who the copyright holder was, and you figured you had safe harbor. They have to come to you and tell you they want that clip taken down. So that's safe harbor. Safe harbor is not... yeah, would you take my clip down? No, I won't. I'm going to keep on playing it because I have safe harbor. That's not what that is. But some people just want to be stupid, and they just want to. And some people want to argue the law. Like, if they argue hard enough, then it isn't a law anymore. Rather than building a streaming library like Netflix Watch Instantly, Zadiva allowed customers to remotely rent a DVD and DVD player located at its Silicon Valley data center, the content of which can be watched on a variety of internet-enabled devices. The service rented movies at $1.99 for a four-hour period, or $10 for 10 movies. Zadiva was able to compete with Netflix by buying the DVD as soon as they were released, instead of waiting the 30 days that the Netflix license takes into account. Most new releases are subject to a 30-day waiting period before they're available to Netflix or Redbox and other similar services in order to bolster DVD sales and pay-per-view rentals. So there's a 30-day waiting period before you are allowed to air that material if you're Netflix or you're a commercial provider of video content. You are making commercially available to the public copyright-protected material. You have a right. You have been given a license by the license holder. And the license holder is getting a piece of your action, and the license holder is saying, yes, you may, thus and so. What's happened with Zadiva is the following. Zadiva said, we're not going to wait the 30 days. Why should we have to wait the 30 days? We'll buy the video, so we own it, and we will now make it available for rent, that is, playback on a player at our silicone data center, and it will play back on your computer. Well, they don't think that they have run afoul of any copyright law because they don't think they're making that available to the public. They said to the judge, we're making it available to one user in his home privately. And the judge said, you don't understand what public means then. If you're making a piece of product commercially available to anybody in the public, whether they're sitting by themselves in their home or whether there's 100 of them sitting in a living room, you are now making that commercially available to the public. And therefore, you have to have the permission of the rights holder. They did not. All they had was the receipt for purchasing the DVD. Well, it's no different. It's a violation of the copyright, technically, to have the DVD, show it to a bunch of people, and charge money, making it available to anybody to watch and profiting commercially from it. That violates the copyright of the right holder. So that's what the judge said, and he agreed with the Warner Brothers people, Columbia, Disney, Paramount, 20th Century Fox, Universal. All of these people filed a lawsuit in federal court. They have the exclusive right to decide when, where, to whom, and for how much they will authorize transmission of their copyrighted works to the public, Judge Walter wrote in his order. That happens to be true for all copyright holders. And yet, and this is the thing about most of these so-called Internet freedom people who like to talk a good game, they're scared to death of the big lawyers. They will run, turn tail, and run. The people that the Internet freedom people violate and steal from are small businesses, people that won't hire big lawyers right away, or people that can't afford to hire a lawyer, period. That's who these so-called Internet freedom people victimize and steal from and rob blind, and they say they're doing it all in the name of Internet freedom. Well, take on Warner Brothers, then, if you're so butch. All right. Finally, he tossed out Sadaiva's argument, get a load of this is desperate, that the company was not broadcasting movies to the public, but to private homes. And the judge said, a commercial relationship is a public relationship. If you're charging that guy money, if you're selling to him something, that's a commercial relationship. And that makes that person that you're selling that product to a member of the public.
How can you know so much about this?
I know so much about it because I deal with this stuff every day in my own business. It's pretty interesting. You should look up the DMCA, Digital Millennium Copyright Act. Most people don't even know what that is, have never read it, and don't think it exists, but it does. All right, world-famous Phil Henry Show. We're going to be coming back in a minute here. A white supremacist loses his job at a Catholic school. How is that possible? How is it possible that he got hired in the first place? We'll find out here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Radio for patriots by patriots. It's the Phil Henry Show. For patriots, by patriots. It's the Phil Henry Show.
And welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Hey, don't forget that if you go to our homepage, we have a five-day archive of all of our video casts. So if you've missed a video cast, and the video cast is the radio show, with the extra added bonus of looking at my ugly kisser as I do the show. It's exciting. It could be traumatic. But what the hell? It's a little something extra we throw in, and it's an HD. My pasty Irish face in HD. How do you beat that? All right. Catholic school principal fired for white supremacist views. Well, that's just another day at the office, isn't it? I'm joking around. The Archdiocese of New York, although for me, I got to tell you, I told my producer, Jason Rantz, I said my first exposure to an anti-Semite was, I shouldn't say, well, I'm going to say it because it happened. My first exposure to a blatant anti-Semite was one of the brothers that taught me in high school. In Catholic high school, this guy was giving me books about how Jews were this and Jews were that and Jews were commies. And I mean, it was all true, but I'm kidding, okay?
You're going to get in trouble.
I'm not. He knows I'm kidding.
Who?
The only Jew we got on the staff.
Oh, man.
All right, I'm kidding around. So, actually, we have two, Jason and you, bud.
Right.
All right. The Archdiocese of New York fired a Bronx Catholic school principal whose white supremacist beliefs were found to be incompatible with the philosophy and practices of the church, the Archdiocese said on Tuesday. The church launched an investigation of Frank Borzalieri, excuse me, I practiced it too.
Borzalieri,
who had been principal of Our Lady of Mount Carmel School in the Tremont section since 2009, after the New York Daily News revealed his link to white supremacist groups. Mr. Frank Borzalieri has been relieved of his position as principal of Our Lady of Mount Carmel School. Joseph Zwilling, a church spokesman, said in a statement, the decision was reached following a thorough internal review of his opinions and beliefs as expressed in his books and columns and a discussion with Mr. Borzalieri himself. Borzalieri's ability to run a school where a majority of students are black and Latino came into question after reports that he has written books declaring America's growing minority populations would usher in a new dark age.
Well, technically...
What do you mean, you mean just...
The shade of skin.
Well, if you're only talking about the shade of skin, yes, it would be a new dark age. Although if more people went out and got tan... Never mind. So, according to his Facebook page, Borzalieri has written for a white supremacist publication noting his long-standing ties to American Renaissance, a publication that has expressed support for eugenics and the racialism of the early 20th century. His ability to run a school where a majority of students are black and Latino came into question after reports that he has written books declaring America's growing minority population to usher in a new dark age. He also reportedly once tried to get a biography of Martin Luther King Jr. banned from public school libraries. How in hell did this guy escape the scrutiny? You know, I think, honest to God, I believe this. I think for some people, some of this stuff is, well, you know.
What do you mean?
I mean, in other words, if I said to the average, I'm going to say this, and some people are going to think I'm lying. I'm telling you, I say this from my heart. If you say to the average white person, this cat's beliefs, okay?
Yeah.
They're going to go, this is what the average white person will say. This is, boy, that's, yeah, you can't do that and teach at a Catholic school. I mean, they're not going to go, wow, is that guy off? Or, wow, where does he get, they're just going to say, eh, you know.
Well, what are you saying, like the white people think like that and everything?
You do, bud.
No, I don't.
Well, you got that problem with black people.
Did I get along with Robert?
Yeah, sometimes.
I don't know, man. You're weird. I didn't want to bring... You're not even an example of anything normal. I'm saying that a lot of white folks will say, wow, that's really bad. That guy shouldn't, you know, he shouldn't be talking about that stuff. You know what I'm saying? In other words, it isn't so much what he believes, it's what he's been running his mouth about. Borzalieri's books include, this guy wrote these books, dig this, The Unspoken Truth, Race, Culture, and Other Taboos, and Don't Take It Personally, Race, Immigration, and Other Heresies. He notes on his Facebook page that he's best known for his conservative views on immigration, affirmative action, gun control, education, libertarianism, and his opposition to what he terms the lack of morality and the lack of focus on the basics of learning in the New York City public school system. Mount Carmel pastor, the Reverend Eric Rapaglia, said he knew of Borzalieri's views, but didn't, this is what I'm saying, but didn't see any cause for concern when he hired him to run the school. That's what I'm talking about. That's the way some white people think. And speaking of the way some white people think, I'd like to give you a little piece of my mind. Our show is produced by Jason Rantz. Technical director is Dan Northcraft. And, of course, our technical and associate producers, Chris Johnson and Fred Scotty. The world-famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com for all your Phil Henry Show needs. Good day.
Phil Henry.